Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. ExpressPros.com.
What's up, Atlanta? Welcome in. Atlanta United doesn't exactly get the result that they want, but you know what? It's not a loss. I feel like beggars can't really be choosers at this point. I digress. We got a lot of fun stuff to jump into here. Coming off the bench with me, Garrett Chapman, right here on Sports Radio 92.9. The game, we're going to take this up to about 8 o'clock when we hand it over to the Infinity Sports Network. I got my man Dom Trotsky on the board. He's taking care of me over there on the other side. We'll have a producer segment. He'll jump in here, obviously. Throughout the show, you'll hear his voice as we go. 404-726-0929. That's the number to jump in. If you want to chat, we can do a little bit of everything because we're going to go all over the place here on the show today, because obviously we have our post-draft reactions, and I feel like people nationally are not high enough on the Falcons, and I'm going to tell you why I think that is, or maybe we're too bullish. I think it could be one or two, one of those two things. I'll tell you that here in about 2 minutes, but we're going to go across the yay. Got a lot of stuff going on later on that we'll jump into it. Giannis to the Hawks, I feel like that's been a conversation topic on social media, at least here in Atlanta. And I'm not sure that that is necessarily the best route for the Atlanta Hawks. I'll explain why when we get up to the top of the next hour. Plus, we got to talk a little NBA, got the playoff discussion, we got college football, because somebody on SEC Network said something that I need to react to. And you will do that here as we get going. But I want to loop this back to our Atlanta Falcons, because nationally, I feel like people are not very high on this team, just in general. And to some level, like I kind of understand that. I get it. But I'm looking at power rankings, and obviously power rankings are meaningless. They're dull. They're dumb. But I click on it anyway because it's something that passes the time and people get excited about reading it. Obviously, everyone loves a power ranking. Everyone loves a post-draft grade. But I've obviously talked a lot.
It's list season.
It's list season. It really is list season. And I've talked a lot about how I'm not super big on post-draft grades. I think they're stupid, just in general. But
they're stupid because you don't really know what the post-draft grade will be for like another 5 years.
It's 3 years. I give it 3 years. You generally know what you have about 3 years down the road. 4 years down the road, you're signing these guys to second contracts potentially. And then 5 years down the road, that's when you know exactly, you know, 3 years in, you know exactly who you have and what you put together. But a post-draft grade, doing something the next day, is just silly to me. But I can't help myself. I can't get past it. Because I was reading The Athletic the other day, and I love reading The Athletic. They have a lot of great stuff. They said that the Falcons are the 24th best team in the NFL. 24th. That's crazy. I feel like that's too low. That's too low. So I went around the rest of various sites. I went on Yahoo. They had him at 19. I saw CBS. They were like in the at 22 or something like that, 21, 22. And I'm sitting there, like, maybe am I just too bullish on what this team is going to be? I feel like I've done a decent enough job of trying to measure expectations for this Falcons team moving forward. I think that they should be a pretty good team. I think they should have an opportunity to win the NFC South. I think they're the team that we saw in the first half of last season, not the team that we saw in the second half. But the fact remains, this is a team who's lost a lot of football games over the last 7 years. This is a team who's lost more than they've won every single one of those years. So that's got to weigh on these minds. But I tell myself that, and then I look at these post-draft grades of what some of these people say that the Falcons did. Dane Brugler, who comes out with a Beast every year on The Athletic, tremendous scout. He does a very good job. The Beast is one of my favorite tools to use when I'm going through the draft process. He rated the Falcons as the 30th best draft class. 30. That blows my mind. I get it to some level because you only had, what, 5 selections in this draft? 30? You had 2 first-round picks. I understand if you're not super bullish on what the Falcons did to get back up into the first round, but as far as the players you got 2 first-round quality guys, potentially 3, depending on how you feel on Xavier Watts. I saw several drafts that had Xavier Watts as the top overall safety in this draft class. And we got him in the 3rd round. So I don't understand how you can be that low. Plus, you filled needs with Billy Bowman. Jack Nelson can come in here. It's a 7th-round pick. I can't put too much on it. But Billy Bowman's somebody who's going to come in and fill an immediate need. But this is what they had to say. They said, quote, "The Falcons needed edge rushers and defensive backs and got 2 of each. But they traded away next year's 1st-round pick and 5th-round pick to get the ones they wanted. If Walker and James Pierce fix the pass rush finally, and if safety Xavier Watts can compete for starting snaps, it'll be worth it. If not, Atlanta will miss the playoffs for an 8th straight season." Yeah. Not exactly reinventing the wheel with that perception there. But I don't understand how you can have them at 24. They're in there around the Jacksonville Jaguars, around the New England Patriots. That blows my mind. That's too low for me. Some of these teams, some of these publications had teams like the Carolina Panthers above the Falcons. I get the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I get that. That's fine. Because the Buccaneers, they've dominated the NFC South over the last couple of years. They've had a certain level of stability nationally that garners respect. But what they don't have is what the Falcons have coming back right now. The Falcons are in decent shape to make a run at the NFC South title. They've got the offense to make this thing work. And the biggest pitfall for this team consistently on an annual basis has been his pass rush. And you go and fill 2 glaring holes with your first 2 picks in this draft. The next big thing was the secondary, and I think you fixed it. Because Billy Bowman is somebody who I think is one of the unheralded guys in this draft class. He's somebody who I think can come in and be an immediate starter for this team and provide meaningful snaps as an experienced nickel. Most guys, when they get drafted, it's like what we have with Clark Phillips. Oh, he's an outside cornerback, but he's a little small, so he projects as a nickel. That's a different position. It's a completely different position. It's a reason that the Falcons haven't really had a lot of success at the nickelback position over the last couple of years. Because you don't have a guy on the roster who's experienced enough to do it. Now you've got a cornerback competition there between Kevin King and Billy Bowman. That breeds success. You look at what the safety room is doing now that you've added Xavier Watts. You're breeding competition in the safety room. You have a outside linebacker pass rush rotation on this team right now. So I don't understand the ranking. I don't understand why the Falcons are where they are in a lot of these national publications. I'm not saying that this is the top 15 team in the NFL right now. I'm not saying that whatsoever. But the disrespect that the Falcons have been getting nationally blows my mind. 404-726-0929. Am I overreacting to this? Are we projecting too much on what Michael Penix is going to do next year? Because, I feel like I've been pretty steady with my prognosis for what he's going to be. He's made three starts. He's a rookie quarterback. He's a rookie. He's not somebody, he's not Jaden Daniels. It's not somebody who's mid-season. He's not somebody who's going to come in and be have that sophomore slump. He hasn't even had his freshman year yet. Three starts is not really enough to know what exactly a guy is going to be, but we've seen flashes. And the flashes have been bright. Very, very bright. Look at what Joe Patrick posts on Twitter. The 92.9 insider for the Atlanta Falcons. He's not somebody who gets super bullish about any team or anything or necessarily with the Falcons, but he is about Michael Penix. I think he could be the thing, the catalyst that gets us up over the top. But nationally, this team is just not getting enough love. They're not where I think they should be. And ultimately, who cares? I think ultimately, it's all a moot point because we flip around and we have somewhere between half of the playoff teams from the season before don't make the playoffs. And obviously, that means that half has to be replaced by somebody who didn't make the playoffs, right? And every year, it seems like there's one team or a couple of teams who can make that run to kind of be that surprise. You know, you could talk about the Chargers last year, the Commanders last year. You can go the year before that. You can talk about the Texans. The difference is, I think the Falcons are in better shape to contend for an NFC South title than any of those teams were to win their own divisions. Those teams were picking in the top three. I actually think both of them picked number two because C.J. Stroud, I want to say, was the second overall pick, right? Jaden Daniels was the second overall pick. You're telling me that those teams can flip around and go make a massive run and dominate their divisions and make a playoff push? I think the Falcons could do the exact same thing. I think they could. They got more weapons, and the defense, I think, is set up to be at least marginally more successful. At the very least. At the very least. And that's being conservative. Marginally more successful is still going to be a lot better than what we've had at any point over the last 5 years. Because the defense has been consistently pedestrian. Consistently pedestrian. And I think that they went and added some guys who are going to continue to bolster this group. I don't know. I mean, ultimately, I think the Falcons are a playoff team next year. The Falcons are going to be a playoff team next year. And it's a moot point because there's going to be so much turnover that they'll see us eventually. One of these days, they are going to see it. We'll find out. Yeah, they had Tampa at 12 in this. Feels like a little overrated to me. Saints are at 27. Panthers are at 28. Specifically about this Athletic article. We'll see. We'll see. Am I too bullish on the Falcons, or is the national narrative that the Falcons just are a mediocre, a below-average team? Is that more what we're going to see next year? I wonder. 404-726-0929. That's the number to jump in the show. We'll take your calls here on the other side. I see a few people have already chimed in. We'll jump to you when we get back. Plus, we got to go across the air. I want to talk about some of this Braves baseball. Huge series in Atlanta. First pitch at 7:15. We'll chat about that when we get back. My name is Garrett Chapman. You're coming off the bench with me on Sports Radio.
Going up. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Hi, this is Javon, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow, a real person.
Yep, I'm here to help with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
Well, I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
We can also send you samples fast and free.
Wow, I mean, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule, and there's no haggling, pressure, or hidden fees either.
Hmm.
I just might have to do more.
Whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over, and I'm thinking of something...
Blinds.com has covered over 25 million windows, all backed by a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com now and get up to 50% off with minimum purchase. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Instacart is on a mission to have you not leave the couch this basketball season. Because between the pregame rituals and the postgame interviews, it can be difficult to find time for everything else. So let Instacart take care of your game day snacks or weekly restocks and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Because we hear it's bad luck to be hungry on game day. So download the Instacart app today and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three orders. Service fees apply for three orders in 14 days. Excludes restaurants.
Anyone who loves playing baseball or softball knows that one of the first steps in that journey is breaking in your first glove. It's where your love of the game began. Where does your child's baseball or softball journey begin? Go to playball.org to get started. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
I'm Emma Grede, and I've spent the last 20 years building, running, and investing in some incredible businesses. The more success I've had, the more people started coming to me with questions. How do you start a business? How do you raise money? How do I bounce back from failure? On my new podcast, Aspire with Emma Grede, I'll be answering these questions and more through weekly conversations with the smartest minds out there. Listen to and follow Aspire with Emma Grede, an Odyssey podcast, available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
It's another game. I see the Atlanta Falcons as a playoff team in 2025. I do. Nationally, it doesn't seem to be that way. I don't think that that's really the national consensus. They're going to learn. I think they're going to learn eventually. 404-726-0929. That's the number to jump into the show. Let's go straight out to the phone lines. What do you say? I got Cole out there. Cole, what you got, man?
Hey, man. First off, I just wanted to say I agree with every take that you have, man. I believe that the national media just have not been, you know, smart while looking at this team. I believe that the trade and trading up in the first round was actually a good trade. If you look at it just simply based on picks, I believe we technically pick swapped with the Rams. Mm-hmm. Pretty much gave up a second rounder for a third rounder. Made a great pick in Pierce. I believe Penix is going to take that step forward, and I think that, you know, the only gripe that I can really agree with the national media is we really technically don't know what Penix is going to be. Mm-hmm. I mean, I loved what I've seen in those three games, but, you know, a three-game sample size ain't a full season. But I believe that after the draft I just witnessed, I believe in Terry and Raheem and them, and think we, if we're not a playoff team this year, it definitely should be a failure.
Yeah. Cole, thank you so much for the call. And look, it will be a failure. It will be a failure. I think Terry's job kind of rides on this season. Not kind of. It does. It absolutely rides on this season. I think he's a good general manager. I do. I think I've started to see some of the vision, and I'm starting to see some of the decision-making start to make a little bit more sense. It didn't make sense for me for a little while. Why do you go get a luxury position at running back? Why do you go get a quarterback when you have one already? Well, now that we're looking back, I think we're trending towards a more run-first type of approach in the NFL. Look at the amount of running backs that we just saw drafted last week. You had four guys, I think, on the first 2 days. I mean, you've got one of the better running backs now in the NFL. You're ahead of the curve on that. You drafted Michael Penix recognizing the fact that this was a weak draft class. And you recognize the fact that you're not going to be picking in the top five again. Because there are a lot of teams in the NFL who are stuck in this quarterback purgatory. Falcons aren't in that situation, or at least they hope. And I think ultimately that's what all of this comes down to. Because, Cole, like you mentioned, I've been saying this for a good long while, at least since the draft on Sunday and then the draft night recap show on Friday night. It's a pick swap. But that's the gamble. That's the gamble. Because if the floor falls out on the Falcons next year, then it was a tremendous mistake, but Terry Fontenot is not going to be here to deal with that mistake. It'll be another general manager. If it does work out, which I think it will, it'll effectively just be a pick swap, like you said. The Falcons could end up picking 22, 23 next year, conservatively. They may not be up in a divisional round or even an NFC championship type weekend. I'm not saying that that's what this team is capable of doing, but once you get to the dance, you never know. You just got to make it to the dance first. But ultimately, this is a team that hinges on the play of its quarterback, not the guys that we drafted last week. And that's what is the biggest catalyst for this team and why I am so excited about what this team could be. Because Michael Penix could really take that next step as a bona fide franchise quarterback, something that we haven't had in this city since 2021. And really, you can go back a little further because Matt Ryan was at the end of his rope at that point. And Michael Penix, he's a leader. He's somebody who's got a killer arm. He's somebody who I think this team will rally behind. And you get a guy like that, you add something like that to a locker room. Not that Kirk Cousins didn't have that, but I think Michael Penix has something that Kirk Cousins never did. You have that killer arm talent and that leadership ability and the way that this team is going to rally around him week one. This is a playoff team. This is a team that I think is going to take a gigantic step forward. And oftentimes, the national media is a step behind the local media. We see this team. We see what they do, and we see the way that they grow. We also can recognize where they're weak. I just think the Falcons have done a very good job over the last month and a half or so of covering up some of those weak spots. And all that's going to do is going to let those highlights shine just a little bit brighter. But like I said, this all hinges on Michael Penix. And I want to listen back to some coach's audio. TJ Yates, he had some interesting comments here. This is the quarterback coach. He says this about Michael Penix as a leader.
Absolutely. He's, you know, everybody has their own leadership style, leadership qualities. He's going to be completely different from Kirk. You know, he's a very genuine leader. He's not a guy that's going to be super out loud and outlandish and all that stuff. He leads a lot by example with how hard he works and how he carries himself around the building and on the field and all the extra work that he does. But he's never going to be a big rah-rah guy. It's just not his personality. And I think the most important thing you have to be as a leader is genuine, because guys can sniff it out in a heartbeat if you're not being genuine. So Mike's always going to be himself no matter what the situation is, good, bad, really good. You know, he comes off the field some of those games last year. He could have just thrown an interception. He could have thrown a touchdown. You would have never known the difference because he is so level-headed, and that's one of the things we love about him.
I can't remember who said it, but it was at some point last fall. Somebody was talking about Michael Penix through the draft process, and the thing about Michael was so consistent no matter what happened. His heartbeat was basically the same. He had that resting heart rate that was just resting throughout the course of a game. And that's so valuable. And it's also so uncommon for a young quarterback. For somebody to go out into, you saw what he did against the Commanders. He leads this team on a potential game-winning drive. He's got the it factor. He's got something that is just not common. It's not common to have that in a young quarterback. And I think he's going to show the rest of the NFL what he's capable of doing next year. And it may not show up in a stat sheet. A lot of success when for a young quarterback doesn't show up in a stat sheet. If he comes out there and throws for 3,500 yards, I think that's a tremendous season. Tremendous season. Limit the interceptions. Throw for 20-some-odd touchdowns, maybe 25. That's a tremendous season. You just have to let the other guys on this team shine. Because you got a lot of dudes in this offense. You got a lot of dudes. And I think Michael Penix is going to be the guy to kind of steer this ship. But it's that situational football that TJ Yates continued this discussion about with our quarterback, Michael Penix.
Just little things, just going through the offense. You know, obviously, offense, you know, some of the things that he did out there on the field was the first time ever, whether it was throwing to a certain guy, like throwing a comeback to Drake was the first time he's ever probably thrown that ball, whether it was practice or the game. There's going to be a ton of things that, you know, got some catching up to do with the guys that we have. You know, little footwork things, little accuracy things are always going to be part of, you know, quarterbacks just progressing. And yeah, it's not a ton of stuff, but he's always going to have to be able to learn more situations, learn more situational football, when to do certain things, when not to do certain things. He's an aggressive player with an aggressive arm, but sometimes you got to be able to dial it back a little bit. He has great field vision. He has the ability to manipulate underneath defenders with his eyes, and sometimes he might not need to do that all the time, but it's one of his greatest assets, so we don't want to, you know, overcoach or outcoach some of those things out of his system. So, you know, it's just, you know, the process of learning a quarterback and learning how to coach him and him learning the offense and, you know, rolling through those things.
I'm excited about this team. I'm excited about this quarterback. I think the defense should take a big step forward next year. Second-year play caller here is Zach Robinson. You got weapons. You finally got a dude on defense who I think you can be, you could look to as a potential leader for this room and for that locker room. And Jalen Walker is that kind of guy on defense. Michael Penix is that guy on offense. Both are under the age of 25. Man, I'm excited. The future of this team, I think, is pointing in the right direction. I'm very excited about the Falcons. But look, you got to take that next step. It's on Raheem Morris at this point. I want to see what he can do next year. But I'm excited. We'll continue this discussion as we go throughout the show. Theo Ash is going to join me a little later on, but we'll do an NFL pick six as well. We'll talk about some of those other NFL teams. But there's a lot of other stuff that's happening in the Atlanta area. Let's jump into that. Let's go across the air. Man, the Atlanta Braves were so close last night. Grant Holmes turned in a tremendous performance. And he was fantastic. Six innings pitched, four hits, two walks, nine Ks, two earned runs. Generally speaking, you add that to a perfect three innings from your bullpen where they, what, had one base runner, was just a walk? I would have told you, hey, man, Braves would have won that game. Not so fast. Yamamoto, he only allowed a single hit over six innings pitched. Braves only get two hits, just five base runners. Half of that is just Marcell Ozuna by himself. Oh, it's not good enough. Not good enough. That's the story of this Atlanta Braves season so far. They got so close to 500. I'm still on time. My time frame is still working out. I said, I think it was 2 weeks ago now, Dom. What was it that I said? It was May 10th. Braves are going to be over 500. We're still trending that direction. We almost got to it way early. I think of the teams, Brandon Gaudin, I think, tweeted this out. I think there were five other teams who got back to 500, and every other team needed at least 80 or 90 games to do that. Braves would have done it flip of a switch. So anybody who is freaking out or panicking about this Atlanta Braves team, you can relax. This is not exactly a Sal Licata situation where the Mets are going to run away with this division. We know what happened last time, but look, you got another important one tonight. 7:15 up there at Truist Park. Got to get this one. I just want to win. We need to win one. Just win one. If we lose on Sunday, fine. Just win one. Bryce Elder is going tomorrow, but Spencer Schwellenbach's going tonight. This is the game that you got to win. Because I'm not a big believer in Bryce Elder. I don't think Bryce Elder is really going to be here on this big club, the big league club, for much longer. As soon as Spencer Strider comes back, I think he's got to go down. AJ Smith-Shawver's got to stay up. I think it just makes way too much sense. Way too much sense. But Shwelly, I mean, he's somebody who he needs to get back on track too. I mean, he started so strong. He came out of the gates just throwing haymakers. Allowed just one run, period, over his first 20 innings. You come back and look at his next 17 and two-thirds innings, 13 runs. 13 runs. Not all of those earned, but still, 13 runs. There's a reason we looked at him as one of those guys who can really be that next great pitcher for the Atlanta Braves, kind of take the world by storm. He had a great season last year. He's been pretty consistent. It's just sometimes guys get the book on you, and you just got to find out what to do next. People were jumping on him, swinging early in counts. And this is a Dodgers lineup that's not going to mess around. They got a lot of talent. They got a lot of talent. And not everybody can be Grant Holmes and strike out the three MVPs in order to start out a game. Which, by the way, how incredible is that? Grant Holmes. I mean, take a bow. I mean, what he's done in the month of April moving into now the month of May, he's just been Mr. Consistent. We pretty much, you know what you're going to get out of him. His highlights have been very good. Like, his highs have been very high. His lows, not so bad. And that's what you need in a third, fourth starter. Notice how I didn't say fifth. No, he's kind of moved up past that. He's now a lock to make this roster. I've heard some people say that he could go to the bullpen. Hogwash. No chance. He's way too consistent of an arm right now. You need to keep him in that rotation. Ronald Acuna, Spencer Strider. I have update, ... There's no update. Who knows? We'll see. It looks like Spencer Strider. I mean, he's not doing any mound work or anything yet, per Grant McCauley on social media. He tweeted that out yesterday, but he should be back here, I'd like to say, next week. Fingers crossed. Man, I'm tired of talking about injuries. Ronald Acuna early next month. Still not playing, but we'll see. We'll see. Tired of talking about injuries, like I said. But we got a lot of other NBA stuff I want to get into because the Hawks are talking to Danny Ferry. And I think Danny Ferry could be a potential key to unlock some success for this Atlanta Hawks squad. We'll talk about that and a little bit more when we get back. You're coming off the bench with me, Garrett Chapman, right here on Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game. How do the Hawks build a winner? I don't mean a team that can make the playoffs and, you know, flounder and fall out eventually. I mean a team that could potentially make a push to win an NBA title. Is that possible? Is it feasible? Can it happen as this roster is currently constructed? Absolutely not. Probably not. No, I'm not super bullish. We talked a little earlier in the show about how excited and bullish I am about this Atlanta Falcons team moving into 2025. I'm not exactly at that level with the Atlanta Hawks. It's a completely different sport. I'm trying to draw a comparison. Bear with me, folks. But look, I have an interesting thought here for what the Atlanta Hawks can do to build out a contender. Because, of course, we're going through the interview process to see who could potentially be the new general manager of this team. Landry Fields is out. Who's in? Well, Zach Klein from WSB, he took to Twitter, and he reported a few names who've been floated to the top of this potential search of guys who are going to come in here and get an interview. Monty McNair, Calvin Booth, Sharif Abu-Rahim, Elton Brand. But one name stood out in particular, and it was an old friend, Danny Ferry. Danny Ferry. And I just have a feeling that Danny Ferry, the way that he was able to construct this team, obviously he was with the Hawks from 2012 to 2015. He leaves after kind of a disgraceful way to leave. He was given it was like 10 months of paid leave or something for something that went down with Luol Deng and some comments that he made on a conference call. I'm not going to divulge too much into that necessarily, but I'm going to talk a little bit more about the way he built the Atlanta Hawks roster. Yes, I'm talking about the one that won 60 games. And it's also why I think that that sort of mentality can build into why the Atlanta Hawks, or how the Atlanta Hawks can manufacture a winner in Atlanta sooner rather than later. And it all comes back to this one thing that I've been seeing on social media, specifically on TikTok. I saw this yesterday and I wanted to bring this to the air. It's the theory that the NBA is moving towards a more soccer, it's total football, if anybody out there is familiar with that. Total football, where you're a sequential chain and you're only as strong as your weakest chain. You can have the strongest chains on this thread, but if you have weak ones, the chain is worthless, right? And it's that sort of total football type of mentality. And I think the NBA is moving towards that more so than what we've seen in the past. Obviously, you're only so strong as your weakest link, whatever. It exists in a lot of different sports, right? But the NBA specifically has been able to cover that up with elite superstars. You look at a team like the LA Lakers, right? You add a LeBron James and a Luka Doncic, and that should be enough to at least get you past the first round, right? I don't think that's the direction that the NBA is still going. And it's a slow process. These aren't things that happen overnight. I think that it's more of a team game today than it ever has been. You look at the best teams in the NBA right now. The two best teams, I would say, are the Oklahoma City Thunder and the Boston Celtics. What's one thing that those teams have in common? They don't have a weak link. There is no weak link for either of those teams. What are you going to do? Let Al Horford leave him alone on the three-point line so that you can crash down and take care of some people down the... Well, he's a 40% three-point shooter. You're not going to win that way. Neither of those teams necessarily win with just uber star power. I understand Jason Tatum's a baller. Jaylen Brown's a baller. SGA's a baller. He might win the MVP. He'll likely win the MVP. But I don't think that's what makes those teams great. That's not why those teams are the favorites to win an NBA title. It's because they don't have a weak spot on their team. And that was one of the beautiful things that Danny Ferry's Atlanta Hawks had. That 60-win team was not good because it had a superstar. It was good because that starting five and the depth behind it was pretty cohesive. They worked really, really well. And there wasn't really a massive weak spot. And you could talk about Kyle Korver's defense. Yeah, sure. That's Trae Young's defense. Look, I mean, I think there are some similarities there. There are. And I think it all comes back to this fact that, and I saw John Fricke tweeted this, and this is the other thing that really spurred this thought. He was tweeting out potential opportunities for the Atlanta Hawks to go get Giannis Antetokounmpo, right? 30-year-old superstar. The Bucks really aren't going anywhere fast. His number one running mate with Damian Lillard, he just tore his Achilles. He's likely going to be on the shelf all of next year. And obviously, at Dame's age, I hope he comes back and he's his himself, right? I hope that that's the case. But when you're Damian Lillard's age and you tear an Achilles, that can be a brutal injury to come back from. A brutal injury to come back from. You saw what it did to Kobe Bryant. Obviously, Kobe was a little older at the time, but it's very difficult to come back from an injury like that. So it's pretty safe to assume that Giannis is going to ask for a trade. It's only a matter of time. If it doesn't happen this summer, it'll happen next summer. But the Bucks are going nowhere fast. There's no future in Milwaukee. And they've done everything they can to try to make that work. So naturally, you have teams across the country, really media members, pontificating about and speculating about what it's going to cost to bring Giannis to your team. And I wonder if the Atlanta Hawks would be better suited not to bring him in. Now, from the outside, you would say, Garrett, you're insane for that. Giannis is a former MVP. He's an NBA champion. But maybe if we take a look at what this, the new era of the NBA needs to succeed, it's not about your strengths. It's about highlighting your weaknesses and cutting it down as much as possible. You need to look less at your strongest links and more at your weakest ones. I think that's how winners are decided in the NBA now. That's the direction that this is going. Who are the teams with the fewest links? Those are the teams who are going to go win an NBA title. So what's it going to cost to get Giannis Antetokounmpo? Probably way too much. It's probably going to cost you a Dyson Daniels. It's probably going to cost you a Jalen Johnson. It's probably going to cost you each of your next first-round picks over the next 3 years. And anybody who's rolling the right, that's what it costs to go get a superstar like that. And you're gutting your team and making it fundamentally worse across the board. Because that's what the Suns did a few years ago. A team that played in the NBA Finals was like, hey, we need one more star to get us up over the top, to win us that NBA Finals. And they gutted what made their team great. They weren't great because of any one player. Like, Devin Booker's he's a baller. He's a good basketball player. He's an all-star. But they're like, hey, we need one more superstar. So you trade out all of your assets, all of your fundamental role players, the guys who were critical to your success, to go get that superstar. Now they just fired their second head coach in what, the last 3 years? And they're going nowhere fast. And they're going to have to gut it and start from scratch. And I think the Atlanta Hawks are closer to what that Phoenix Suns team was a couple of years ago. They're closer to what that Atlanta Hawks team was in 2015, the one that won 60 games. I'm not saying they're going to turn into a potential NBA champion overnight. That stuff doesn't happen. But I think you've got some building blocks. You've got some pieces. And all you have to do is focus on the weak spots on this team. You got to focus on the weak spots. I think it's interesting. I think it's a very compelling thought about how the Hawks build a winner. It's not the prototypical way, the historical way to do it, but I think it's the future, and I think the Hawks can get ahead of it. All right, we got a little bit of time left, and I want to talk some NFL football here, so what do you say we hit a pick six, man? Not my best segue there. I generally pride myself on being kind of quick on my feet with great segues. That wasn't my best segue. Not my best work, but look, I think the Atlanta Falcons put together some good work. Talked a lot about what they did in the first round last week, but they're not alone. I think there are a lot of big risers and fallers across the NFL. And I'm looking at a couple, and I highlighted some, and I want to talk about whether they are risers, whether they're fallers, and what they could do next year based off of the pieces that they've put together. And I'm going to start in New England. I worked a lot with Steak on the Steakhouse, and you can't listen to that show and not realize that the guy's from Boston, right? So naturally, I got to start with the New England Patriots. Drake May, I think, is one of the more exciting prospects that we really haven't seen a lot from yet. he's kind of more of that Michael Penix mold where you saw him for a few more games last year. I mean, on a terrible football team. That Patriots team was dog water. But you saw the flashes from the quarterback. He just needed some weapons. They needed some people. And I think that he can flourish in year two. Plus, you add Mike Vrabel, who I think is probably one of the better coaches in the NFL. He's going to bring some stability to that team. And you had the skill players like Trevion Henderson. You got Kyle Williams. It's not going to happen altogether. Not at once. Not at once. But I think you've got some building blocks there that the Patriots are looking to build in the right direction. Will Campbell at left tackle, plus Jared Wilson at center. You got him in the third round. Blown away that you get him there. He's going to be a lockdown guy on that offensive line for a few years. Next decade, I would say. He's going to be a big win there for the New England Patriots. They're one of my big risers. One of my fathers, though, the San Francisco 49ers. It's because I don't think they're a contender in the NFC anymore. And if they are, it's one more year. This is the last year that we'll see it. Because you're relying on Christian McCaffrey, who I don't think is capable of playing 17 games. I don't think he's able to do it. He might give you a really, really good 10 games. But that's not going to get you a Super Bowl. And that's what you're measuring yourself up against. This isn't... The 49ers are a different type of category than what I've been talking about throughout the show about the Falcons. 49ers are a Super Bowl or bust type of team. And I don't know how you get that much better when you offload 8 starters in the offseason. And that's what made Brock Purdy so good. It's not Brock Purdy. I think he has mastered the Shanahan offense and he's perfect for that scheme and all that's true. But if he doesn't have Christian McCaffrey playing at a high level, if he doesn't have Deebo Samuel, who's just sort of the ultimate cheat code, what is Brock Purdy? Kind of an average quarterback. A quarterback who is Mr. Irrelevant. That's kind of what Brock Purdy is. And look, I think he's an average quarterback, but he's also a quarterback that you're likely going to have to pay $50 million now. Yikes. It doesn't really get me super excited. They did just sign George Kittle to that 4-year, $76 million contract. The important thing is that it's 19.1, not 19.0, which is what, who is it? Trey McBride just signed that. So it's very important.
Yeah, because you got to.
Just a little bit up.
Because I need to be the highest paid. Yeah, doesn't matter how much, by how much I'm the highest paid, I just need to be the highest paid.
Yeah. I blanked on Trey McBride's name for a second there.
Who was it? Didn't Nick Saban had like a kicker like that in his contract where like he always had to be the highest paid? So whenever someone got a new contract,
he had to be top three. So every single time a new coach got paid, he would also get paid.
Yeah.
Which, best contract ever.
Yeah.
Another team that I have as a father, the Cleveland Browns. I'm just interested in the draft strategy. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me. I think if they just get marginally better quarterback play, I think they're going to be a better team next year. But you also had a chance to get Travis Hunter. That's a fundamental guy. That's a guy who changes the context of your organization. That's a superstar that does not come around very often. And you traded it away. I mean, very Browns to do that. Very Browns to do that. And then turn around and draft two quarterbacks to a room that you had already added two quarterbacks to in the offseason, in free agency. And then you add two more running backs. Like, Quinshon Judkins is a great running back. So is Dylan Sampson. Why are you drafting both of them? It doesn't make any sense.
Well, what I will say, well, that definitely tells me that Nick Chubb is done in Cleveland.
He's already gone. Yeah, he's on. So he'll be on the move. I think he's already a free agent, isn't he?
I think he is still on the roster. But obviously that signals to me that they're moving on from Nick Chubb. Mm. The thing that's really interesting, because I don't think it would be weird for them to take two quarterbacks in the draft. I think the order in which you took them makes it weird.
Yeah.
Because Dylan Gabriel is not, like, at best he was going to be a backup for you, which means that if you're taking him in the third round, that's fine. But, like, why not take Shador in the third, who has some potential upside as a starter? Because now you're stuck in a situation where you can't cut Dylan Gabriel.
It's going to be loud.
He's a third-round pick. You can't cut him.
Yeah.
Even if he is the worst quarterback in the room.
I also just don't know how you give all these guys snaps, too. You only have so many snaps that you can take in practice.
Well, that's the thing. It's really just
stunting everybody's growth.
I was going to say, and the funny thing is, all of these guys are really only fighting for one spot because Joe Flacco is going to be the week one starter. So everyone's really only fighting for QB2.
It's who takes over for Joe Flacco after he starts floundering by the end of September.
Dylan Gabriel is going to be QB3 because he's just not good enough.
He's not big enough. So he's not an NFL quarterback.
Really, it's Shedeur Sanders versus Kenny Pickett for QB2 in Cleveland.
I think it's interesting. And Kenny Pickett, I mean, look, first-round picks get new life. They constantly do. Shedeur Sanders, obviously. We'll talk to Theo Ash about that at 7:20. I'm very interested and very excited to talk about that. I got to get to a quick break, but I still have more NFL stuff. So, Dom, what do you say? We're going to come back, and I'm going to keep going with this NFL discussion when we get back because I have a couple more risers and fallers. Plus, should the favorites in the NFC and the AFC for the Super Bowl still be Kansas City and Philadelphia? I'm going to tell you the answer is no, and I'll tell you why when we get back. But you got to stick around for a couple of minutes. My name is Garrett Chapman. You're coming off the bench with me. 1 hour down, 1 hour to go when we get back. Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game. The 151st running of the Kentucky Derby is just moments away from happening. I just want to give a quick shout-out to it. I know I got a lot of NFL discussion points that I need to get into. Plus, I heard something about Georgia taking a step back next year and how the SEC runs through that team in Austin. Okay, I'll tell you why that's a little crazy, but you got to hang out for about, I'll say 8 minutes, 9 minutes or so. We'll get to a college football roundtable after I finish up this NFL discussion. But no, the 151st running of the Kentucky Derby, we are just a few minutes away. I think it's the fastest, what do they call it, the fastest 2 minutes in sports or something like that. Journalism is your favorite, 7-2. Sandman is a 5-1 favorite. So the second on the odds table, but no one's ever run one out of his post position. He's coming out there at 17, 151 years, and no one's ever won out of that post. Something's amiss with that one, but maybe Sandman can get it done. I don't think it's going to be the case. I'm kind of riding with journalism just because, you know, we're kind of journalists, right? Sort of, to some extent.
Journalists.
Yeah, but every horse is related to Secretariat, which I found to be very interesting.
Really?
Yeah, every single horse running in the Kentucky Derby this year is related to Secretariat.
Makes sense. They were trying to get those good genes after he won a couple races.
He won a couple races. You can definitely say that comfortably. You can comfortably say that. Sovereignty, American Promise, Citizen Bowl. We got a lot of fun horse names here this year. I love horse names.
Do you think the horses feel the pressure to live up to their dad?
Absolutely.
You think they feel like Secretariat's looking down on them? Like, hey,
yeah,
you got to do this for me. You got a name to live up to.
Let me tell you, the stories I've heard about some of these horses, they are as competitive as their jockeys. And the horse that ran alongside of Secretariat, the one who was second place in all three races, would have won a Triple Crown if it wasn't for Secretariat. Effectively would have run itself to death. It ran like the second fastest time. Belmont Stakes or something like that. Almost killed itself trying to keep up with Secretariat because obviously they want to win. They know what they're doing.
Yeah.
Like, these horses know what's going on.
Yeah, they know it's a race. Yeah.
They know it's a race and they know that they want to win. I think there's a book or something on that that second place horse. I digress. I want to jump back into NFL action, but yes, 151st running of the Kentucky Derby, just moments away from taking place. We're getting back into risers and fallers after the NFL draft. And I mentioned the Patriots, the 49ers, the Browns, but I want to talk about the Steelers too, because they kind of loop in with where the Browns are to some level to me. Now, obviously, they're a better organization significantly than the Cleveland Browns, but they still have some pretty major quarterback questions. I think they've got a team that's ready to make another run at the playoffs. They're just that team that's going to win 9 games, 10 games, just live right there, and maybe they'll have enough to win a playoff game for the first time since God knows when, 2016 or something like that?
2016.
Been a little while. But I like what they did in the draft. I don't think there was a quarterback there for them. I know you, obviously, Dom, you love Shedeur.
Yeah, I would have been happy taking Shedeur in the first round, let alone getting him later on in the draft. But
the further he fell, the more surprised I was.
Yeah, I just every round that went by where we didn't take him, my jaw just kept dropping.
Yeah, I was blown away. But you do go get Caleb Johnson, who I think is not the 92.9 Caleb Johnson, but Iowa Hawkeye Caleb Johnson. He's a prototypical
I will say that was my favorite pick of the draft for us. Him getting him at third in the third round, where I think you can make a legitimate case where you could say he's RB3 in this draft class behind Ashton Jeanty and Omarion Hampton. So getting for what some people could say is the third best running back in this class in the third round is huge, especially at a position of need. Now you have him and Jaylen Warren. He also fits that Arthur Smith system where he's a guy who one cut downhill and runs that zone scheme very well. So he should be a good fit. That's the pick that I'm really excited about. Derek Harmon did good again.
I like Derek Harmon.
Derek Harmon's very good. He's our Cameron Hayward replacement. Yes. I like the idea of having a potential defensive line that's built around Keanu Benton, Derek Harmon, T.J. Watt is still there. Obviously, Alex Highsmith. We drafted Jack Sawyer. We have.
I'm not a big Jack Sawyer guy.
He's just going to be a good rotational piece guy because we have a ton of edges already. Like, again, we have T.J. Watt. We have. Yeah, we have the opposite of what's been going on.
Don't do that. Don't do that to me. I was just talking about how I'm excited about the Falcons.
I was going to say, like, our third guy in our rotation is Nick Herbig. I think Nick Herbig had, like, 6 sacks. Like, he probably would have been a starter.
He would have led the
Falcons
in sacks last year.
So,
probably every year for the last, like, 5 years or whatever.
It's a good roster, good team. None of it matters until we have a quarterback.
Aaron Rodgers or Kirk Cousins. One or the other. It'll be one or the other.
It's one or the other. I think it's Aaron Rodgers.
I still think it's Aaron. Yeah.
Because if he wants to play, you don't really have any other options. It's Pittsburgh at this point.
He might go to New Orleans, theoretically. I don't think so.
Nah.
No one wants to go to New Orleans.
Nah.
Ugh, whatever. All right, one of the
go
some
for
other
the food,
teams.
Not the football.
Yeah, exactly. One of those teams, though, the Vikings. I just wanted to mention them really quickly, just because J.J. McCarthy... How bought in are they in Minnesota?
So I was going to say, it's pretty funny.
So.
It's pretty funny that we were having that question about, like, you know, are we a little too hyped up on Michael Penix? I think you could maybe make the same case with Minnesota. Like, they really have no idea what they're getting
out
of
but he's
JJ
also
McCarthy.
Coming off of a knee injury.
Right, right, right.
Zero starts. He didn't even make it out of training camp. You know, I don't know. But they've got some, I mean, look, you have Justin Jefferson. you're doing just fine.
That helps.
You're doing okay.
And Jordan Addison.
I like Jordan Addison a lot. Yeah. My fantasy team likes him too. But are they a team that's ready to contend? No, I don't think they're contending anything for anything. But I think J.J. McCarthy is going to be an interesting experience. You've got a hell of a coach in Kevin O'Connell, and I'm excited to see what they can do next year. But the Jaguars, are they a riser or a faller? Like, that's one where I think that they're a pretty big riser because you go and make an aggressive move to go get a Travis Hunter. And look, generally speaking, when you make an aggressive move and your trade partner's the Cleveland Browns and you're going for a star at the top of the draft, it works in your favor.
Yeah.
Because that's just what history tells us. And Travis Hunter is going to be a beast in Jacksonville. And he goes back to he's from that area. I think originally he was born down there and then moved up to Atlanta to play at Collins Hill. But I really like that. But it's not even just Travis Hunter. And pairing him, depending on how many snaps he takes on offense, pairing him with Brian Thomas and with Trevor Lawrence and Liam Cohen's scheme, I think that team could be an interesting one to follow. I don't think it's all going to be put together yet, but you just signed Trevor Lawrence to that big old contract, and I don't know how much patience, you have to have patience because you just signed him to that massive contract, but the Jacksonville Jaguars are just one of those interesting teams that just put a pin in it, and come back to it sometime midseason. And I think you might be a little interested with what you find. They remind me a little of kind of where the Carolina Panthers are to some level, you know, where it kind of came together later in the season.
Yeah.
Where you have a quarterback-friendly head coach who knows how to put together a good scheme to fit his quarterback and make him comfortable. That's what Trevor Lawrence needs because he goes from one of the worst coaches in NFL history in Urban Meyer to a coach that's going to put a lot of pressure on you immediately right out of the gate to now somebody who's going to facilitate things a little bit more. And you've got some weapons.
Duval.
I just need to teach him how to say Duval. It's just so funny. I love that. But last team on here for risers and fallers, then we'll get to a college football roundtable. LA Chargers. It's the LA Chargers. I think this is a Super Bowl team next year. That's a team who can push up into the upper echelon of the AFC. I'm fascinated to see what they do next year. And I feel like they've been right there on the precipice for a few years now. And Brandon Staley obviously was not the guy to get it done, but Jim Harbaugh is a different kind of cat.
Mm-hmm. I agree there. Can I say something that's going to sound a little crazy?
Go ahead.
I think it's time for Justin Herbert to prove it.
I completely agree.
I think that Justin Herbert, I feel like, has gotten to skate by a lot of criticism because I think we're all enamored by all
his
of the
arm
tools.
Talent, so
it's amazing. Again, he's just really fun to watch. But you can make a strong case that like they lost that playoff game against the Jaguars a few years ago because he didn't necessarily play that well, especially in the second half. Like, there's certain things that you can make a case that Justin Herbert has a lot to prove this season.
Yeah,
and
he does.
They went out, they got some weapons for you. They signed Najee Harris. They draft Omarion Hampton.
Trey Harris is one.
Again,
I love Trey Harris.
You've got some good stuff there. It's kind of like do or die time for Justin Herbert, I think.
Yeah, he's one of those guys who I feel like quarterbacks get too much blame and too much credit. He doesn't ever seem to get any blame for anything.
I think a part of that is because Brandon Staley was your head coach for a while.
I guess.
Because
you're the Chargers,
you had to
deal
with
and nobody really cares about you all that much because you're
that as well.
Little brother in your own city, which I don't know why they would ever move to LA. Still a baffling decision. But Harbaugh reached the Super Bowl in 2012, which was just his second year in San Francisco. And I think he's got the tools. Ladd McConkey was really your only weapon last year. I don't know. I think the Chargers can be one of those teams that really takes the NFL by storm and the AFC in particular, because it's just three teams at the top of the AFC. It's the Bills, it's the Chiefs, it's the Ravens. Who is that fourth team? I don't know. I think it could be the Chargers. We'll see. I think it's they make a compelling case. All right, so somebody else made a very interesting case. And it was on SEC Network. And I'm going to let you hear this audio, because they say that the SEC runs through Texas. Let's hit a college football roundtable and talk about it. I love college football discussion, and it never sleeps, just like the NFL never sleeps. 16 more Saturdays to go until we get to college football action. Actual football on the gridiron. But look, I'm interested in these comments that were made, because Texas is reportedly spending $40 million on their roster. I saw that in The Athletic yesterday. And people are getting bullish, and people were bullish last year. This time last year, they said that Texas was going to be the creme de la creme in the SEC. Yeah, they had a good record. They also played jack squat. They didn't play anybody. And I don't want to be one of those people calling into Paul Feinbaum and saying, oh, they ain't playing nobody, Paul. It's not who I'm trying to be. But they really didn't play anybody, except for Georgia, the team that beat them twice. But that didn't stop Peter Burns and Chris Doering on SEC Network talking about how the SEC runs through Texas, and that just doesn't make a lot of sense to me. But they started here, and I split this up into a few different takes. So first and foremost, they say that Georgia is starting to falter. I don't know why you would think that Georgia is going to falter. They say effectively that this team isn't able to keep the pieces together. They're not able to sustain the talent that it takes to win in college football anymore, which doesn't make a lot of sense to me. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me. And Dom, we're just going to skip right ahead to cut 33 here. Look, the Georgia Bulldogs still dominated the SEC. They did. They had the ugly game against Ole Miss, and they lost in a game that they had a really good chance of winning against Alabama. But they still say that the SEC runs through Texas. This is what they had to say. Oh, all good. All good. All good. All right. We'll come back to that. We'll table that when we come back to it a little bit later. We'll come back to it a little bit later. Because Theo Ash is going to be coming here on the other side. And I'm excited to have a conversation with him. He is very, very good with all of his draft coverage. He does a lot of stuff building up to the NFL draft. And we will talk to him when we get back. You're coming off the bench with me on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Braves baseball is in a rain delay up there at Truist Park. They got the Dodgers. First pitch was supposed to be at 7:15, but looks like we're going to have to wait a little bit longer there watching it. I think it's up on Fox. It's a Fox game. I think I'm watching Fox. I don't even know what channel I'm on. And then Sovereignty wins the 151st running of the Kentucky Derby. I'll have to celebrate with a mint julep when I get home. But that's about all I know about the Kentucky Derby at this point. But somebody who knows a whole heck of a lot about the NFL is joining me here on the WadeFord.com hotline. His name is Theo Ash. If you're on TikTok, you've probably seen him there. I see him there a good bit. He does a lot of great draft coverage. He's a good resource, someone who I go back to and check out quite often. It's that and his additions to the Stay Hot podcast, and you can find him on Twitter, at Theo Ash NFL. Theo, how you doing, bud? 1 week removed from the NFL draft. Kind of trying to get some sleep here at this point?
Yes, definitely. It was a lot of late nights every day and up in Wisconsin, learning about who we just picked. Maybe I could have watched more guys before the draft and avoided that, but, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah, pretty much. No, I feel you, man. So let's start here in Atlanta, because obviously the Falcons had one of the more, you could say, controversial moves in the first round, where they trade a future first to jump back up in and get James Pierce. And first off, I mean, is this a move that makes any sense to you? Just because obviously you're from the outside looking in, so I want to get your take on that side of it. But then as far as James Pierce, the player, like, who is Atlanta getting in James?
I think that trading up is really questionable. That move didn't make a ton of sense to me. It does from a scheme fit perspective, and we'll talk about that later. But when they traded up, I was just thinking, what are the odds that you're picking at this spot or lower in the draft next year, considering where you are now with an unproven quarterback, whether you like him or not? And so to go to, what was it, 27, I think? Man, I think the first they traded away next year is probably going to be higher than that. But maybe they're going to be way better than I think.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of where I fall. I started the show earlier on and basically talking about how this is a Falcons team who I think can take that next step next year, but nationally, I don't think they're there as far as getting the national love yet. But it all contends, it all hinges on the development of effectively a rookie quarterback. But as far as James Pierce, the player, like, what are they getting in James? Like, what can he do? What can he offer from week one?
I think that he can offer first step juice off the line of scrimmage and threaten the quarterback quickly that way. I think that he can convert speed to power pretty well for a lighter guy with good hand placement as well. And I think with both him and Jalen Walker, you're getting two guys with the versatility to rush off the edge, but also play in space at a surprising level. I like James Pierce Jr. dropping into coverage, honestly, or playing kind of out in the flats. I think he's got some ability to do that more than a Shamar Stewart or some other pure downhill rusher like that. And I find that very interesting in Raheem Morris's scheme, which last year was dependent on a lot of sim pressures, so rushes coming from other places like the linebacking core, whereas the defensive ends might have to drop in that case and it messes with the protection. I think getting two guys who can rush and play in space kind of fit well with him and what he might want to do. Well, we'll see what Ulbrich brings to the table from a pass rushing perspective. But I imagine those kind of exotic pressures will still be in the mix that they can utilize those guys both for.
Yeah. I mean, James Pierce is, I mean, he got a, what was it, the Cheez-It Bowl or something 2 years ago. He got a pick six against Iowa. He's shown capability of doing that kind of thing. And then Jalen Walker, of course, he's the other first-round pick, a guy who I thought was potentially the third-best defender in this draft class, falls all the way to 15 in a move that I did not see coming whatsoever. I thought he would be gone by Carolina at 9 at least. Mm-hmm. But look, I mean, he falls into the Falcons' lap. You get a guy who's that just offers elite versatility. And we know him well, obviously, because we're just an hour away from Athens and a lot of Georgia people, a lot of Georgia fans in this city. But ultimately, like, how do you see him fitting alongside of James Pierce? I mean, is he just the Swiss Army knife, or is he somebody who you see as a guy who can develop into a high-end pass rusher?
I think that he is a Swiss Army knife mostly. I think they basically invented a new position for him at Georgia. Like, the way he was playing there almost doesn't exist in the league, how he was lining up in a lot of odd fronts, which the league is more of an even game. So he was sort of a wild card, a total wild card. And I think that he's going to be able to put up stat lines that are rare. Like, could he get a 10-sack, a 100-tackle season or something like that? That hasn't been done since James Harrison. But with him, he's got the sideline-to-sideline speed of an off-ball linebacker while also having the juice of an edge rusher. I think in certain packages, he'll be at edge. I think he's a little bit small to play there full-time. If there's five guys on the line of scrimmage and it's more one-on-one across the board, I think that he can be down at edge. If it's four guys on the line of scrimmage, maybe you want him off the ball so you can't build double teams on him as easily. I think depending on the formation, he'll be in a different spot.
Yeah, and versatile playmakers are something that the Falcons have been longing for, at least the fan base has been longing for as long as I've been alive, certainly. I mean, this is a city that has not really had a lot of those, at least for the last couple of years. And then one other person in this defense in this draft class that I'm really highlighting as somebody who has a high upside day one is Xavier Watts. He's somebody who I think he was probably, Wes Durham, the voice of the Atlanta Falcons, described him as we were going into the draft as one of the best playmakers on the defensive side of the ball. We see how he's able to go after and get interceptions. He's just kind of a ball hawk. But as far as immediate fit and upside or even downside, for that matter, Theo, what do you see from Xavier Watts?
Yeah, he's got immense upside with all the production on the ball. It's rare. And I think that being in Morris's scheme will really help him, too. With sort of the exotic pressures you see, you also see a lot of exotic stuff on the back end, the picture changing post-snap. Guys you thought were in coverage are blitzing. Guys who you thought were blitzing are now in coverage. One high shells become two high shells. So as a quarterback, it's a lot to keep track of. And when you add a ball hawk like Watts into that equation, the possibility for interceptions is extremely high. And he knows what's going on and the quarterback doesn't. So he can read eyes while dropping to his landmark and hop in front of routes. I'm very interested to see him play next to Jesse Bates. That's going to be really fun.
Yeah, no, that's really the biggest thing for me is the combination of Xavier Watts and Jesse Bates in that defensive backfield. I think it's fascinating. It's fascinating. And Theo Ash, he's joining me here on the WadeFord.com hotline. Give him a follow at Theo Ash NFL. Of course, he's one third of the podcast, of the Stay Hot podcast. But here, what do you say we go around the rest of the NFL? I think the Falcons had an interesting draft class, but they certainly were not alone. And I want to talk specifically about this running backs class because I think that we're starting to see a transition from, obviously you have the pass happy era of the last 10 years or so, but I think we're starting to see a transition into the more of a rushing attack, a rushing oriented attack in the NFL. And that's highlighted, I think, in what we saw in this draft class this year. Who are some of the guys at the running back position in particular that have stood out to you and are immediate upside type of picks just day one next year?
Definitely Amarian Hampton stands out first. I mean, Genty is clear, but that offensive line in Las Vegas is a little questionable still. I think that when you look at a team that's ready to really have a running back burst onto the scene, Hampton to the Chargers is a really intriguing landing spot. I think that's a really good scheme fit. There are a lot of pulling guards in that scheme and a lot of straight downhill runs. And I think Hampton runs at his best in that type of system when he doesn't have to think about, you know, what gap do I hit? Where do I go? Just follow my guard, break the first tackle that I see. That's Amarian Hampton. And Joe Alt is there and Rashawn Slater to really help him out. They've got some interior offensive line pieces I like as well now. So I am really, really excited to see Amarian Hampton in that Harbaugh scheme. Running back wasn't the most crying need for them, I think. But the fact that they took one when he was available should just let you know how good of a scheme fit it really is and how easy it is for Jim Harbaugh to sink his teeth into that project.
Yeah, Theo, I mean, I think Shedeur Sanders is obviously the story of the draft weekend, but as far as a more surprising drop, did he have a more surprising one than, say, like a Quinn Ewers?
I think it's a lot more surprising than Quinn Ewers. I mean, Quinn Ewers, I liked so many of the Texas guys this year. I liked Banks. I liked Golden. I liked their tight end. I liked everybody on their defense. Like, man, I was like, man, this Texas team has more draft picks that I like than any other team, even more than Ohio State, who won the national championship. So what's the problem? Why didn't they win? Well, Quinn Ewers, he was a bit of an anchor keeping the team down, I believe. Some of the deep accuracy, the pocket presence, was just, to me, the reason why they didn't win at all. And with Shedeur, I mean, he had his share of problems, but I don't think he was part of the problem in Colorado. They got a lot better once Deion and Sanders, Shedeur that is, and Hunter showed up. And I think Shedeur was part of that. All right. So I definitely thought Shedeur Sanders would go higher. Ewers, I never really believed in.
Yeah. No, I think that's fair. I saw the question posed somewhere, and I thought it was just sort of an interesting topic because, I mean, Quinn Ewers, I assumed he would be like a fifth, maybe a sixth round guy. Seventh round was kind of surprising. I don't think anybody saw what we saw from Shedeur Sanders. Dropping from a potential first round pick, some people saw him as a third overall pick, which I thought was a little rich, really, but him dropping to the fifth round was obviously like one of the more shocking things that I've ever seen on a draft of any kind, no matter the position. But, you know, I want to go to the L.A. Chargers here for a second because you mentioned Amarian Hampton, and I'm very interested in what Jim Harbaugh has coming into his second year over there in L.A. And I think that they could be one of those teams who could push into the top teams in the AFC. You look at the playmakers that they have around Justin Herbert. Are you bullish about what the Chargers are at this point? I think they could be the biggest riser in the NFL next year. What say you?
I really like what the Chargers are. Like you said, the run game is going to become more and more important, I think. The two high shells of Philadelphia and the Fangio defense are just going to become more prominent since that just won the Super Bowl. And I think as those nickel defenses, those two high shell defenses without a lot of people in the box become more popular, Harbaugh just gets more and more powerful with how much he likes to, you know, play smash mouth football, put in converted defensive tackles to be his fullback. He wants to know if your seventh and eighth and ninth defensive players are as good as his seventh, eighth, and ninth blockers. And if he can find those mismatches on the perimeter with his tight ends and his fullbacks and his wide receivers, it's going to get really dangerous with Amarian Hampton. And they passed the ball a lot more than they ever had as well in the back half of last season. They realized what a special talent they had in Justin Herbert and started working in a ton of deep play-action shots, which they were the best at in the league. So I think they've got a winning formula, a winning quarterback. I think things are shaping up very nicely for them. The pass rush will need to we'll see about that. Joey Bosa is gone. Khalil Mack is on the older side. You need a really good four-man pass rush to, I think, really win in this league, and I don't know if they have that. But they've got a lot of other pieces, especially in offense, that make me think they'll be poised to make a deeper playoff run here soon.
Yeah, or at the very least, it'll be a fun team to watch. I'm excited to see what they can do potentially. Even if they just break the mold of the Bills, the Chiefs, and of course the Ravens. I mean, those are the top three teams in the AFC. Maybe they can be the fourth team that jumps in there. But last one here for you, Theo, before I let you go. I'm not a big fan of draft grades or saying somebody won the NFL draft per se, but who is somebody in the NFL that really helped their case to potentially push into the playoffs or at least take that next step in getting closer to a playoff run in the near future?
See, I want to say the Chiefs, but, you know, they're so good already. But I just loved what they did this entire draft. You know, after the Super Bowl they had, I think it'll be easy to project them to never make it back or have a hiatus from the spotlight. Man, when they keep drafting like this, Josh Simmons at 32, yeah. Right? They traded 32. Back and they got him. To me, like, he's got a higher ceiling even than a Will Campbell who went number 4. I mean, in the games where Josh Simmons was healthy, the beginning of this year, he was dominant versus Iowa, and he was having a really good game against Oregon before he got hurt. If they get that version of him, like, holy cow, that's the home run pick of the draft. And then James Pierce Jr.'s teammate at Tennessee, Omar Norman Lott, they got to play opposite Chris Jones. That guy has a lot of juice. Tennessee rotated their defensive lineman a lot. And whenever he would come in, I was like, keep him in. Please keep him in. Because he was just going crazy on every guard that he saw. So they're going to have to slide offensive line help Chris Jones's way. And then with Norman Lott feasting on the one-on-ones, like, that's going to be really scary. And, yeah. And up and down the draft board, I thought the Chiefs did a really great job. So, again, it's not a new team going into the playoffs, which might be against the spirit of your question. But I got to speak my truth. The Chiefs won the draft, and as they win a lot of things.
Yeah, look, I mean, Theo, there's a reason the great teams stay great, you know? I mean, they draft well. They keep the talent coming, you know? I mean, the Ravens did a really good job with Malachi Starks where they got him, and then – I mean, look, you get a Mike Green in the second, third round. I mean, wherever he ended up falling, I think it was pick 89 or whatever, wherever he ended up.
Yeah.
But you get that later. I mean, there's a reason these teams stay great, you know, and that's well within the spirit of the question. Theo, I really appreciate your time, man. Great stuff as always. Keep up the good work. Give Theo a follow at Theo Ash NFL on Twitter. Go check him out on TikTok as well. But he is also a member of the Stay Hot podcast. Theo, thanks so much, buddy.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, bud. All right. When we get back, we got a little update on the Atlanta Braves, plus a tornado warning for Carroll County. Watching that on Fox 5 and on 11 Alive, they both took a break quickly to give that update. And if you're out in Carroll County, get off the roads. Make sure you are getting to a safe place. Definitely do that. Or if you're in the surrounding areas. I know we cover the Carroll County area. So if you're in that area, go seek cover immediately. So I just wanted to pass that along. But I do want to talk a little bit more about what that Georgia situation was. Does the SEC run through Texas? I don't think it does. But these SEC network hosts sure think it does. We'll hear that when we get back. My name is Garrett Chapman. You're coming off the bench with me. One more segment to go right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Big thank you to Theo Ash, who just joined me talking a little NFL action. You can go check that out, of course, on the Odyssey app. You can also listen to every single show, no matter where you are. Download that app and follow us today. I want to talk a little NBA here. All right, I'm going to finish the show off with a college football roundtable. Hear from Chris Doering and the rest of his folks over there at SEC Network, Peter Burns and company. They have an interesting take. I think it's completely ridiculous, and I'm going to tell you why here in just a moment. But I do want to talk about the NBA playoffs quickly. Because tonight we've got a Game 7. Tomorrow night we have another Game 7. LA Clippers, Denver Nuggets at 7:30. So I think it should have, yeah, maybe just tipped off. I haven't seen it yet.
Yep, that is live right now. Clippers are up 9-5.
Oh, call it. Game over. No, I'm just playing. No, that should be a good game. I'm actually very interested with that one. The Clippers are a team, the Western Conference just in general is very compelling. And Dom, I'll give you full credit here. You said the Timberwolves are going to beat the LA Lakers. I said Lakers in five. I was technically correct in one half of that discussion.
You had half of it right.
I was half right, just not right with the team, which makes me even more wrong. But no, I think it kind of goes back kind of what we were talking about earlier, weakest link theory that I think is kind of playing its way in to the NBA right now. But the Clippers and the Nuggets, 7:30, just got underway. I don't think either of those teams are really going to make a compelling case to win an NBA title. Could I be wrong? I don't think so.
The Clippers are so interesting. Like, I feel like if they can put it all together and if everyone's healthy for a full postseason run, they have everything they need.
Well, they also, but you're leaning on a James Harden.
That's the issue.
And
it's so much uncertainty.
No, he's not uncertain. He's very certain that he's not a guy who wins the playoffs.
Well, no, he won't. But like, if you have a healthy Kawhi, I think you're fine. But
Kawhi ain't been healthy.
That's the issue. Like I said, like it's just so many questions.
He's been one of the more disappointing free agency signings that
absolutely
I can remember.
The Clippers gutted, again,
everybody.
They signed him and got rid of SGA. They got rid of Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who's about to win an MVP this year because mm-hmm. Kawhi Leonard signed there and said, hey, I want Paul George.
Like I said, what did I say earlier? You trade away the fundamental pieces of your team, the role players, you lose basketball games. I've rarely, if ever, seen that work out. And occasionally it does. Occasionally it will.
The only time that I can think of in recent memory where like it worked out where they gutted like their entire young core was the Lakers and trading for Anthony Davis. And you had the COVID year, but they did win a championship.
They won a championship.
You got rid of Julius Randle and Kyle Kuzma and Lonzo Ball and all that, but you did win a championship.
Yeah. I mean, and a good example of that in the inverse is potentially what you saw with what Kawhi did when he went to Toronto. It's not like you gutted your team to make that happen. I mean, you send a lot of draft picks and other things, but it's like, for the most part,
they sacrificed DeMar DeRozan.
Yeah, DeMar DeRozan, who's a really good basketball player. He's a really good player, but Kawhi's better, just fundamentally better.
I always
and he kind of had a San Antonio by the you know what?
Oh yeah, I always think back to a fan sign when the Raptors won that championship in their mm-hmm. parade, and there was just the one Raptors fan who had the sign up and was just like, DeMar DeRozan died for this.
It's true, and I think DeMar DeRozan's still a very popular person out there in Toronto, but ultimately, I mean, look, he sacrificed his. his ring so that everybody else on that team could have one.
Exactly.
And Kawhi Leonard has been just a monumental disappointment. But it's between Kawhi, playoff Kawhi potentially taking off, which I don't believe in anymore. I just think his time is coming gone in the NBA. Still a great player. He's just not a guy who can will you to a championship kind of like he did in Toronto. I just think that time's over, and that's just the next stage of your career. But between that and the best player in the world right now, with Jokic, where, I mean, ultimately he's the ultimate cheat code, where he can do anything and everything on a basketball court, and as long as his other players, his role players, step up and do their job, I think they can be a good team. I just have a hard time believing that anybody at this point is going to beat Oklahoma City in a 7-game series. It's just that simple to me.
It feels like OKC and Boston are on a collision course.
It's a collision course, you know. And I hope I'm wrong. I mean, I don't hope that I'm wrong. I actually think that would make for the best case scenario for an NBA Finals. That'd be a lot of fun. But the other one that I'm really watching, Warriors and Rockets. Rockets aren't going anywhere, but this is great playoff experience for a young team, a team that it's still kind of bringing all the pieces together. I think most of their guys are under the age of 24. That's a very compelling team moving forward. They're the 2 seed, but underdogs, I guess, to the grizzled veterans that are the Golden State Warriors, who I'm blown away that they even got to this situation.
I was going to say, I'm very nervous for the Warriors.
They look old.
The longer these series go, the worse that is for your team.
They're the team.
I mean,
that
Jimmy Butler's already.
Most.
Jimmy Butler was already got injured during this series. Like, you all needed. Sir. You needed to end this in six. You needed to end this when
Hell,
you were
needed
at,
to end this in five. You had a chance to end this in five.
I was like, you were at home in game six. Now you got to
go home again, and you didn't do it.
You got to go to Houston now.
Yeah.
And try and win on the road, which, granted, you've done before, but it.
Yeah, we'll see. The Warriors are just a better team with Jimmy Butler, but. And I think that they're just too stubborn. I have a hard time believing that they lose this game. I really don't say that. But I also said that about game six. I said the same thing in game six. And the last time that the Warriors gave up a 3-1 deficit, 2016. That was 2016. We all remember what happened in that one. One of my favorite playoff series ever. I think that was the greatest playoff series in 2016 with the Cleveland Cavaliers coming back from 3-1. Best playoff series I've ever seen. Best playoff series I've ever seen. But got some interesting second-round matchups, though, because you got the Knicks and the Celtics. That's going to be Monday at 7 o'clock. Pacers and Cavs, that's tomorrow at 6 o'clock. And then I think that's going to be interesting, too. The Celtics are just too good for the Knicks. Point blank. I just don't know. The Knicks aren't going to have enough. I mean, Jalen Brunson's a freaking baller, man. That guy's so good.
I say it all the time. I don't think I've ever been more wrong about a player than Jalen Brunson. Mm. I remember when he left Dallas and New York gave him that contract, and I said, what the hell are you all doing? There's no way he's worth that much. I think you're ridiculously overpaying for a guy who ate because all of the attention was on Luka. No. He's a baller.
Yeah.
He's legit. There's a reason why he was named like the most clutch player in the NBA this year, won some award like that, showcased that multiple times in this first round against the Pistons. The Knicks are solid. I like what Kat brings them, even though it is a little different, and it seems like on the surface it would be a weird fit because, you know, like that the whole idea behind Tom Thibodeau teams is, you know, grind and tough, and that's not really words that you associate with Cat, but it works. He's found a very good role
in there.
He
coached him in Minnesota, didn't he?
No.
Thibodeau did. I'm pretty sure.
Was Tibbs there?
I think it was Tibbs. I think it was right after his time with the Bulls, and he goes to Minnesota. Right? I don't know.
That was Wiggins. I think that was because he had Jimmy Butler there. I think it was. Or no, he did have Cat. He did have Cat. Yeah, it was at the very end.
It was Wiggins and Cat, and it just never worked out. It just never came together. But the other one there, I just don't. They're not beating the Celtics. I'm sorry. This is a formality.
Yeah, it's a formality. Yeah. It'll be a good series, though. I think they can push them 6-7 games. I wouldn't be surprised.
I'd like to see it go six. I'd like even more so to go seven. But I'm hard pressed to think that the Knicks can beat them 4 times. I just don't think that's happening. Pacers and Cavs, another formality. I mean, that's tomorrow at 6 o'clock. It's a formality.
The Pacers are here because the Bucks were injured and are a team that's just absolutely falling apart.
Yeah, they're mentally broken.
Yeah.
it's a formality. They're not beating the Cavs. Sorry. I'm not here to juice up these series.
Cavs
I'm here
in
to
five.
Give you some.
I'll give my prediction. Cavs
yeah,
in five.
That was brutal. But then the other ones, Thunder and Timberwolves, which they'll play Monday and
that
Tuesday.
One.
Those will be fun. Western Conference is going to be a lot of fun. But I got to get to these comments that Dave Doering and Peter Burns made. So let's hit a quick college football roundtable, and then we'll wrap up the show. So Peter Burns and Chris Doering said effectively that Georgia's falling off the map. They said that Georgia's not able to sustain what it's been over the last couple of years. You know, that model that Alabama did, that really they had built up to perfection, where you have a guy who's going to be drafted in the NFL. He goes down. What do? Oh, well, you just pull in one of those other guys off the bench who he's also going to the NFL. I mean, hell, this isn't that Alabama squads, those teams from the mid-2000s, the 2010s, they had four, five, six guys running down on kickoff coverage who were eventually going to be or were five-star players or future first-round picks. Like, they guys like Rashawn Evans was running down on kickoffs. Reuben Foster running down on kickoffs. Those are guys who are bona fide studs. Not even just guys who were like diamonds in the rough. No, those were diamonds among diamonds. And Georgia, I don't know if you can do that still to this day, but I think Georgia can still do that with the best of them, if not better than just about anybody else in college football. But this is why that they say Georgia is starting to falter. Take a listen.
Absolutely built on the foundation of what Nick Saban built in Tuscaloosa, which is I have a draft pick, and then the backup of that draft pick is a draft pick, and the backup of that draft pick is a freshman who will eventually become a NFL draft pick, right? That's what Saban was able to do, and he was able to stack this talent on the depth chart.
Yeah, and then he follows that up and says this about where the SEC runs through. Take a listen.
I get it. And again, it's not necessarily a demise. It's just I don't know how you can continue to build upon that. And then the question kind of stems for, all right, if Georgia's a team that has struggled, is it Texas that's now the superpower of the SEC going back-to-back in their college football playoff runs? Now, in fact, that they're looking at spending $35 to $40 million on this roster, if you're going to look at the numbers, the SEC does not run through Georgia right now. The SEC powerhouse are the Texas Longhorns.
Yeah, back-to-back playoff runs. What about back-to-back dismantlings on the football field? Georgia annihilated Texas in Austin last year. Annihilated them. They did it despite throwing three interceptions. And playing on the road. Do you know what they did next in the SEC championship games? You know, the games that actually count on the football field. Georgia lost its starting quarterback at halftime, comes from behind, and dismantles you in the second half. And you want to talk about more talent. Georgia had 13 players drafted last week. Texas had 12. Georgia wins again. What do they have that Georgia doesn't have outside of a $40 million payroll? They have no history with Steve Sarkisian. They have the shoulda, woulda, coulda with Steve Sarkisian. They have an Arch Manning who I think is going to be really, really good. I think he's going to be really good. I don't think that's much of a hot take here. I think Steve Sarkisian's a hell of a coach, but he's 0-2 against Georgia. He's 0-2. The latest national championship odds, they suggest Texas has the better chance of winning the next title. And if the reports are true that they're spending $40 million, $20 million was enough to win for Ohio State. We'll see if that's enough to do it for Texas. But why is Texas any more suited to win next year than Georgia? You talk about talent outside of the quarterback position, Georgia goes tit for tat. Texas also has to replace a boatload of talent. And do you know what Georgia had that Texas doesn't? Composite recruiting classes that are consistently above Texas's every single year, going back over every year. Give me the dogs and then some. You talk about win-loss record, you talk about mentality, and the fact that they have to do it in Athens next year. Nah, dogs by a touchdown. At least. We'll find out more. Obviously, college football 16 Saturdays away. I'm very excited, if you can't tell. I'm very excited. They'll play in Athens on November 15th. That is going to be potentially the game of the season. But if history repeats itself, which, you know, it has a knack of doing, I think the dogs will be just fine. And I don't think Kirby Smart's up there worrying about the opinions of SEC network personalities. He doesn't care about mine either. frankly. But the thing that he has consistently shown that he's able to do is pull talent into the city of Athens. That team is never going to be lacking for talent as long as Kirby Smart's the head coach of the Georgia Bulldogs. That's just the facts. That's just the way it is. They also won the SEC championship last year, so the SEC runs through Athens until proven otherwise. Hell, I would say Tuscaloosa is a better shot because the Alabama Crimson Tide have given him nightmares over the last decade or so, however long he's been in Athens, 7 years? Saying it runs through Austin. Texas hasn't won a damn thing. Not a damn thing outside of preseason trophies. All right, that's enough for me. Infinity Sports Network is coming up next. Big thank you to producer Dom. As always, you do a fantastic job. Theo Ash, thank you for joining me earlier on in the show. My name is Garrett Chapman. You've been coming off the bench with me. We'll be back again this time next week, so set your calendars. Get those calendar invites. We'll be talking again very soon. Till next time, be kind to another. Talk soon.